coming to you live from our secret underground lair.
This is Gotham Undercover,
a Golden Spiral Media podcast dedicated to the Fox television series Gotham.
This week we discuss a new chapter from the storybook of Gotham's villains and defenders of justice.
Now it's time to join your hosts, Tim Arthur and Karen Lindsay, for
Gotham Undercover.
Hey there, citizens of Gotham. I'm Tim.
And I'm Karen.
And this week, the episode was, what was it, Karen?
Everyone Has a Cobblepot. But of course, I'm referring to it as Everyone Has a Cobblepot.
Yeah, that's kind of appropriate. this week, directed by Bill Eagles and written by Megan Mustin Brown. Pretty good episode, I thought. What did you think, Karen?
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought it was not so in-your-face good like the good ones have been lately. This one was kind of sneaky good.
No blatant eyeballs popping out at you?
No, not violent good.
Yeah, no. So we really like this, and it's nice to see two really consistent episodes, I think, back-to-back. It's been a while since we've seen that. Actually, in my opinion, since the show first started. The first two episodes are very solid back-to-back, and we've kind of seen this little bit of a seesaw back and forth. Show's never really been bad, but, you know, it seems like, superb episodes are always kind of followed by a good episode, but nothing spectacular. So it's good to see them kind of on track with two solid wins in a row here. Wanted to share some feedback with you. Feedback is... There's lots of different ways you can submit feedback, which Karen will talk about in a couple of minutes. But this is some feedback that we recently got from Danny in Dallas, Texas.
Hi, this is Danny Hernandez, Dallas, Texas, for Gotham Undercover. Big fan of the show, first time leaving feedback. I thought it was another good show this week. One of the things I do enjoy, like, spoilers, well, of course, is a feedback show, when Alfred got stabbed, like, you know, Gotham doesn't need to follow comics or whatever. It does its own thing, but, you know, it's a team storyline. But this thing was, one thing that's strange, like, this show's surprisingly getting quite violent. Like, with, Fish Mooney covering her eye up and all that stuff, like, whoa, do they know what time things starts? But, so far so good. I'm getting pretty invested with characters. The Catgirl, Ivy, side plot. It doesn't take you too much of my time, so hopefully, that gets paid off. But enjoy the show. Hey, take care. Peace out.
Awesome.
Yeah, so Danny, thanks for sharing your feedback. And that's something that that we've echoed on the show before. The show does carry a TV-14 rating. And I've always felt that the show kind of pushes that boundary pretty hard. What do you think, Karen?
I agree. It does for that early in the night. I had the same sort of feelings about the Friday night stuff on NBC. Mm-hmm. They do the same thing. They push that boundary because there's like Hannibal and Grimm and then Constantine. They moved Constantine from 10 to 8 and they didn't change the content. I'm okay with it as long as the person watching it understands what they're getting. But,
8 o'clock's pretty early for this kind of content, in my opinion. I mean, this at least, even AMC doesn't really have any kids shows. But even, their major shows, they don't launch their shows at 8 o'clock. Their primetime really starts at 9.
Right.
For that type of content. And granted, a show like Walking Dead or Mad Men, the content's much more mature even than Gotham. But, 9, I think if there's any visibility of blood or gore or violence, it really should not be 8 o'clock because 8 o'clock is kind of sitcom central time zone. Families are still kind of, they just wound down from
hanging
dinner.
Out. Yeah. Yeah.
So I've always felt it's, I really enjoy the show and I don't mind the content, but I don't think, I'll tell you, I have a hard time watching it because it's on so early. So yeah. I'm usually watching it on a replay, either via DVR or Hulu or something like that, simply because watching it live is, that's 8 o'clock's early, especially with people working, maybe not even getting home till 7 o'clock and then having to get dinner for everybody. And, it's pretty tough, but, really appreciate the feedback, Danny. That was some really pointed feedback, and we're glad you're still enjoying the show. And that eyeball was pretty gross last week, wasn't it?
I agree. I think their strategy is, you know, how crowded Monday night is. They're just trying to put it up against something that they think they can get ratings.
Right. So if you want to share feedback, one of your options is to call our Golden Spiral Media voice feedback line. And that number is at 304-837-2278.
And we also have a website that is goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And there you can type in some text and it'll get sent to us via email. You can attach an audio file or you can use the SpeakPipe widget right there on that page. We record on Wednesday night, so get your feedback in by noon Eastern on Wednesdays.
Yeah, absolutely. We really appreciate your feedback and it makes the show even better.
It does. That was great, Danny. Thanks.
You know, getting some conversation back and forth with fans of the show is really important, and it brings another level to our enjoyment of Gotham, for sure. All right, so let's talk about a segment we call Dossiers, which really kind of highlights some characters that we see for the first time or play a major part in this episode.
Some good ones this week.
Yeah, who do we have this week, Karen?
Well, we had definitely the Dollmaker appeared in this one. Dr. Dollmaker. Dillmacher, as it were. He decided to show his face this week. And then we had the caretakers of Commissioner Loeb's farmhouse. That would be Jude and Marge, the lovely couple who made the cake for the trio who came to visit. Zilu. He was the underground, I guess he was kind of a Yakuza boss that they went to visit. Mm-hmm. He was only in the episode for a couple minutes, but he was a pretty pivotal role in this one. And, of course, the lovely jewelry maker daughter of Commissioner Loeb, Miriam Loeb.
If I was to send you some of that lovely jewelry...
Oh, man, I'm wondering where to buy it on Etsy. Yeah.
I don't think they allow the sale of biological jewelry.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, well, you know.
You can make leather stuff.
Well, I mean, maybe who would buy that, though? Maybe somebody like Angelina Jolie, maybe, because, you know, she used to wear, like, vials of blood around her neck and stuff like that.
By the way, Marion Loeb was played by Nicole Tom. And she's been in a lot of stuff, The Princess Diaries and some other stuff. But you might know her from The Nanny as the oldest daughter. And, of course, you know her father, Commissioner Loeb. He was back, and he is played by the inimitable Peter Scolari from Bosom Buddies.
Yep. Man, so Bosom Buddies.
Those were our dossier folks this week.
Yep. Let's dig right in, Karen. Like I said, this was a pretty solid episode, and we'll divide it up into thematically, you know, the groups that we've kind of dictated really populate the show. We've got the police, the mob, the kids.
Your fourth one.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put this out there. You know, we're not going to we've got a couple of weeks ago, we introduced a segment called Barbara and said, why?
Right.
You know, but this week there's no Barbara, and I just put, yay.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's start out with the police. We've got Harvey. We didn't mention Harvey Dent's back this episode.
No, but he's part of the police.
Yeah.
And he was played by, what's his name? He's played very well by this person. I can't remember his name.
But they're actually... there's some
Nicholas DeGusto.
Right, right.
Very good actor.
Yeah. There's some interesting stuff going on this week at the GCPD behind the scenes. We've got Detective Flass, who got himself in a bit of trouble, was acquitted of all charges due to some shenanigans behind the scenes that kind of Commissioner Loeb was orchestrating.
Yep, some string pulling.
Yeah, and a little bit of blackmail going on there, and... They kind of coerced our main man, Harvey Bullock, into kind of giving a false testimony to support Flass's innocence in this case, because he was blackmailed as well for one of his prior misdoings.
Yep. Yeah, and this is where the title of the episode comes into play, where he tells Gordon, everyone's got a Cobblepot, because, you know, Gordon, that would have been his blackmail material. Yep. If Cobblepot hadn't actually lived.
Yep.
So, you know, his, unfortunately, the guy he had to kill actually died, and so that can be used against him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had no choice but to either, you know, go down for this killing or turn on the truth and come, you know, say that this evidence was planted in Flass's case. So it gets Flass off, and, you know, things are not good. Yeah. So, you know, Commissioner Gordon, at least he fesses up to Gordon. It's not Commissioner, sorry. I keep calling him that. At least he fesses up to Gordon, and he says, look, you know, I'll tell you straight out. He has the goods on me.
Yeah.
I had to do it. And I'm sorry, but there's not much I could do. And so, of course, you know, they turn to Harvey Dent. Harvey's got a plan.
So what I liked about this episode actually was, you pointed it out, I think, before we started recording, it was kind of sneaky. It was all kind of behind the scenes string pulling in this episode, which I really enjoyed seeing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of kind of backroom dealing type stuff. And Gordon actually uses it in his favor. But to get to that point, there's a whole lot of stuff they do. They actually are Harvey and Jim go to Commissioner Loeb's farmhouse, where he's got kind of a secret that he's hiding out there.
Yeah, well, first they get double-crossed. They get told to go to this Yakuza den.
Right, right, right.
And really, that's a setup that Loeb has sent them there. You know, Loeb's ex-partner has sent them there. And that's a setup. They call it in, and that was really an ambush. But then, you know, they go to Cobblepot, and he says, well, you know, there's this place, and, you know, Bullock and Cobblepot and all of them, they get together, they find this farmhouse, and they're going to go there on this pretense of inspecting it. And this is the loosest part of the episode for me is, okay, first of all, what are they inspecting? This couple, I think I would have said, what are you inspecting?
Yeah. Well, no, because the thing is that they were renting it or something, right? Or something like that.
Caretaking it.
Yeah. So basically, they, Dent and Gordon, I, from what I recall, kind of posed it as we're just making sure everything's okay on the property. You know,
right,
for Loeb. Loeb's having his checkup on the property or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah. So they're obviously they're literally there just trying to dig for dirt on Loeb.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, definitely. That's where, you know, Cobblepot has said, the Penguin has said, well, I know he keeps files and stuff here. There's something here that he's hiding. And one of my favorite lines from this whole thing is said when Harvey Bullock is talking to him, and he says, let me see if I can find it.
While you're looking for that, though, I wanted to point out, too, that some of the also really enjoyable moments of this episode are once again courtesy of our main man, Enigma.
Oh, yes.
He is still relentlessly pursuing the lovely Kris Kringle.
Oh.
And I like the fact that she's got KK embroidered on her sweater, by the way. I think that's awesome. But, you know, she's still not really buying into Ed's romance. And he shows up at one point, wants to give her some flowers, and she kind of fabricates that she's got a new boyfriend, and she's sitting next to one of the other police officers, and she's like, oh, well, actually, I do have dinner plans. Yes, I'm with Tom now. Tom's my boyfriend. And
yeah,
there's a really, you know, Tom's like, you know, hey, yeah, I'm a boyfriend.
Yeah, I know. But he has a riddle too, doesn't he?
Yeah, he says, wasn't it like, what has two hands and does not clap? Or something like that. And
of course, it's an easy one for him.
And Ed's like, A clock, of course.
Right. The flowers were not good.
No.
So I have to say, they weren't impressive.
Yeah, they were kind of like probably picked out back of the police department in some like weed garden.
Yeah, he needs to step it up.
Yeah.
If he wants to date her. That storyline needs to come up a little bit if they want to do something with it. I think if that's going to be the source of some tension, I think there's going to have to be a bit more to it.
Well, I think they were actually playing more of the fact of the riddle this week. They mentioned riddle several times.
Yeah. Yeah, that, you know, they're trying to point to the fact that he's going to be the Riddler. Well, yeah, I get that already.
Well, like I've said, I mean, even in the artwork for the show, there's a building with a green question mark on top.
Right.
So it's coming. Yeah. It's just a matter of when, right?
Right, right. So here's the quote. Bullock is prodding the Penguin, and the Penguin is saying, yeah, there's stuff in this farmhouse. And Bullock says, well, how do you know? You know, it doesn't look like a place where you'd hide evidence. And then he says, do you expect a sign that says super secret blackmail hoard?
Yeah. 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 Bullock's, he's always the king of the one-liners there.
Yeah. So I love that when they drive up and they're going into that whole thing. And there's a power play happening there. Not only do they find Loeb's secret, which is his daughter, and they only find half of the secret. They put two and two together in the fact that his wife died about the time that his daughter was put in this house. So mm-hmm. they think maybe his daughter saw something.
Right.
And that's why she's there.
But obviously they put together the fact that his daughter is literally not all there. Right. And the daughter killed the mother.
Right.
But she did it with a candlestick or something like that, I think she said.
Mom was going to take my spotlight. Mm. She's crazy.
And the daughter, Miriam, has a hobby of taking birds off the ledge of her window and making bird skeleton jewelry, which is very beautiful, I must say.
Oh, lovely. Again. And I wondered if it was kind of a wink to Arrow, even though it's on a different network. They were Starling Bones.
Hmm.
Starling City. Yeah, that was weird. She was weird. And then, of course, you know, she comes into the room. They all come downstairs. And this is where the Penguin has acted like the couple has overpowered him and gotten away.
Right.
And we find out later that he actually made a deal with them saying that, you know, thanks for your help. I'll get you out of town so that Loeb doesn't kill you.
Right.
And, you know, I guess he's thinking he's going to get more information out of them, maybe.
Right. And we learn later on, too, that Commissioner Loeb's whole MO for having her there out there, kind of secluded in the farmhouse, was essentially to keep her out of the spotlight and ensure that she didn't end up in the Arkham Asylum.
Right. Exactly right.
Yep.
And I love how when she comes downstairs, you know, she's into birds, and she says how Penguin looks like a bird. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
He does kind of look like a bird.
Yes.
A penguin.
So, you know, we find out all this information, and then Gordon finally gets back to Loeb, and he's like, yeah, we know your dirty little secret here, and by the way, unless you want that to go viral, buddy, why don't you endorse me for the presidency of the police union?
Yep.
Brilliant.
That was a bit of a twist I was not expecting.
Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed, too, like when they showed the sequence of kind of like Jim shaking the hand as it was announced that he was endorsed. He kind of looks and he really kind of looks and mugs for the camera. That was awesome.
Yep. And here's where this series becomes the Gotham that we know, as in the city, where nothing is black and white. This is Gordon not being the good guy all the time.
Right.
He's blackmailing someone now.
Yeah, so, he's not always on the straight up
nope.
good guy role anymore, is he? He's kind of nope. playing both sides.
Yeah, and, you know, he could have used this to get rid of the commissioner, but he says, and I think it's a good move on his part, whoever they get in here, I'm not going to have dirt on, and he could be in Falcone's pocket as well, so I might as well just keep you there. I got dirt on you. I got you under my thumb.
Plus, he's corroborating with Penguin and some of the underworld as well. Just like, and I think he, I think a lot of that honestly can be attributed to Bullock, right?
Yep.
And we're starting to see perhaps, you know, knowing where the lore of the books go, you don't really see this too much in the books, but Bullock was really kind of tight with Fish and, you know, they did solids for each other all the time.
Right.
But you're seeing kind of a relationship develop somewhat between Gordon and Cobblepot, too.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of helping each other out.
That never happened in the books. But, yeah, that was one incarnation of Bullock where he – there were two. One where he was just completely corrupt and one where he was kind of gray. And I think they're going the gray route with him mm-hmm. in this show. And I really like that. I think that's the better of the two versions, Bullock.
Agreed.
That's the version I like, at least. I didn't like the one that was just completely corrupt anyway in the book. He had no depth at all. So I like, first of all, Gotham is that anyway. I mean, the city of Gotham should be that. It shouldn't be a black city. It should be this gray. Just the whole city's gray.
In the city.
When the lights. Is that what you're singing?
For the love of money. In the city of Gotham.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just think that sort of thing is the embodiment of Gotham, is that just if you're not bad, completely right. bad, then you're just gray. Yeah. There's just not anyone that's good in Gotham. Even Batman's not completely good.
Speaking of gray, or maybe blue now, let's talk a little bit about Fish Mooney.
Let's do.
Move
That's
on to the
great
mob.
Segue.
You like that? Well, we're on the color tip here. So, so Fish is the first time we see her. She's waking up in the bed, and this whole kind of sequence with Fish in the hospital or the you know the facility that she's in, really odd.
Yeah.
And,
what is this, the third time we've seen
transsexual at one point and all sorts of weird stuff. But she wakes up and she takes the bandage off her eye because we learn that the doctor, and she finally meets Dr. Dallmacher.
Mm-hmm.
And he introduces himself and he says, you know, I'm the proprietor of this facility. And he goes into that and he talks a little bit and he actually introduces Fish to one of his clients who has, you know, a full face bandage and, you know, she needed new kidneys, but he threw in a facial reconstruction for free because she really could use it. He said,
yeah.
I thought that was funny, but the one thing that, as he was kind of showing her around the facility and things like that, the one thing that he said, he's like, oh, and you might remember my former office manager or whatever, my former facilities manager, and it was his head on a woman's body.
It was gross, and all the skin was off of his legs being transplanted onto other people.
It's really weird, man.
It looked like he was just being harvested and experimented on, and
that was disturbing.
And it was not the best special effects ever.
But it was really disturbing.
It was. I think it was more disturbing because the special effects weren't good.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was really. I think that's the last time we're gonna see Mr. FX and Reanimator.
Yep.
In the show.
So basically, she kind of says. She's in full negotiation mode with Dr. Dallmacher, and she's like, you know, look, I can, you know, it basically boils down to the fact that the doctor says to her, look, you know, you give me my guard back, and then I can start getting some concessions for the people downstairs. And mm-hmm. He obviously wants still a steady stream of people coming up to supply some vital organs. And she takes one of the people downstairs. Wasn't it the Eric guy? I think it was
Kelly.
Kelly, that's his name, right? Kelly. Yep.
She lets them take Kelly away. Yeah. So I'm guessing that's why we got his name.
Yeah, yeah. So she's kind of playing that right now, because when she goes back down there, they're all like, "You lied to us. You're hanging out with the man now. Look at you. You're all cleaned up and getting fed." And yep. She said, "Look, you know, I kept my promise." And she's got a blue eye now because the doctor gave her a blue eye.
Yeah. So I have some theories.
Mm-hmm.
I still kind of wonder why he didn't just kill her. She does say that they bring that up in this episode. You know, you would have just done it by now unless you had a use for me.
Right.
But I have to think one person isn't of much use to him. So is there a reason? Does he need someone really strong down there to be his advocate? And he decided, well, maybe she can be that person. You know, he wanted someone to step up and do this, you know, that none of his guys were really taking charge. And, you know, maybe this can be his go-between. I guess that makes more sense now.
Well, I think anybody that's ever experienced Fish Mooney in any capacity realizes that she is a very strong woman.
Sure.
And I think that alone garners a lot of respect.
Right.
And I think that's probably what this is. You know, they're seeing that, wow, this is somebody that she's a fighter. She commands respect, and we could utilize that somehow.
Right. Now, I can see Dr. Dahlmacher saying that.
That's what my point is, yeah.
But in between now and then, I could also see them putting a bullet in her head.
Yeah.
So getting there...
You want what? Exactly.
Right. Getting there is the strong feat, I think, that happened. Because all those other guys don't care. I mean, those guards, I think, would have just killed her.
Yeah.
And they had plenty of opportunity to do so. Those other people down there weren't going to do it. The other guys down in the basement wouldn't have blinked, really. Right. I mean, they just would have gone on, dragged her off. And
so let's kind of move into our discussion with Mr. Cobblepot, the Penguin himself, by... first talking about his hair.
What is the deal?
Every week, the dude has the most unique, you know, he's got messy hair. I get it. But every week, it's a whole different hot mess of something.
It is. Hot mess is such a great term for that.
And it's brilliant because it's like Oswald's hair is like its own character.
It is.
You know, so I'm really enjoying seeing what the style of the week is for the Penguin.
Maybe we should have a name for it every week.
This was the anti-gravity. I don't know,
Penguin,
something.
Yeah. The anti-gravity faux hawk.
Exactly. Yes. That's it.
That would be it this week.
Yeah. So I enjoy it.
It was like a parody, a parrot.
Right.
Kind of feathery thing. Yeah.
So he tagged along with Gordon this week, and one thing we didn't mention is that when they were at the farmhouse, they encountered the wife there is a little bit hostile, and she kind of pulls a shotgun on him at one point in time, was like, "What are you, get out of here."
Yeah.
And so the way it all ends up basically is that Oswald ends up taking those two and bringing them back to his club, and they both meet their demise, and in a very interesting way. He basically says that only one of you can live. You know, one of you is going to die, and the way we're going to sort this out is we're going to let you two decide who it's going to be. So immediately, crazy wife goes and starts choking out her husband.
Yep.
You know, but the brilliant tactics of the Penguin are basically the fact that he's like, "Oh, thank you so much for your help, because I've only got one bullet left." And then he blows her away.
See, I think that was a lie. I think he had plenty of bullets.
Yeah,
I just think
awesome.
He wanted to play a mind
game.
That
was awesome.
And I think that's fine. I mean, that's very Penguin-y.
Right.
And that was fantastic. You know, you do half my dirty work for me. Go for it.
Yep.
That's, you know, manipulative. Very good. And I think it's a mirror to Gordon, to Detective Gordon, where Gordon takes his information and turns it around and uses it to manipulate the commissioner. And so does the Penguin use the information he gets from the farmhouse to lure this couple out, and then he kind of manipulates them into turning on each other. So it's almost like they have their little mirrored storyline. And now he gets a favor from Commissioner Gordon. Not Commissioner Gordon. From Gordon.
Detective Jim.
Detective Gordon, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So is it going to be come to my birthday party? What's it going to be?
Meet my stylist?
Oh, can't do any worse, right?
Oh, but it's a beautiful hot mess, right?
You know, I have naturally curly hair, mm-hmm. but I have to say, I think I could tame mine better than that.
You probably need some pretty strong chemicals, though, right?
Well,
I don't know how much about
the top of my head. Yes, mm-hmm. I mean, I could handle the top of my head. It's the bottom that's the problem. But man, what does he do to the top? Okay. I don't. It's just weird.
He mixes in some penguin poop and.
Is that what it is? Guano?
I don't know. But it was entertaining. The Penguin never ceases to entertain.
Yeah. Just looking at him and listening to him in this episode was really very fun.
Yeah. So let's talk about the kids. Primarily, let's talk about Master Bruce, because Master Bruce is getting quite assertive in his adolescence.
Mm, no kidding. I like where he's going.
Now, what I want to know, though, is I know why, but I'm really surprised that even though he was pretty seriously injured by his former service mate, Reggie, he didn't want to name him.
Nope.
And I'm wondering why. Do you think maybe it's because he knows he was doing like an inside job for the board or something? What do you think?
Or maybe he wants to do his own research on him, or Alfred is smarter than.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's something going on. So he's got something brewing.
Right.
I just don't know what it is.
Right. We've also got Kat kind of shows up at or Selena Kyle shows up at the hospital as well to kind of check
Hi,
in.
Hi, Bruce.
She gives him a nice little hug. And we talked a little bit before we recorded about the fact that it's a pretty realistic portrayal of how, you know, younger boys and girls act towards each other when they kind of have feelings for each other to some extent, or their hormones are kicking in and they don't know yet how to act around each other. It's a pretty realistic portrayal, I think.
Yeah, a little bit of teasing. The girl is definitely in charge.
Mm-hmm.
The boy is kind of cootie-ish.
Yep.
You got cooties. I like that he is becoming an alpha male, though.
Yeah.
I really do dig that.
Yep.
That's definitely Bruce Wayne. Not so much in regards to Selena, but, you know, telling Alfred that he orders him to get back into bed.
Yep.
I like how Selena shows up and her excuse is that they stop by to steal food, because that's so realistic.
Yeah,
hospitals
right.
Hospitals really just leave food.
Especially, well, not only that, but who the heck wants the food in the hospitals in the first place?
Exactly. No one.
Yeah.
And she's eating an apple, and an apple would be, you know, on one of the trays. So that's, you know, I just like that. And she sees him in the hallway and, hi, Bruce. Hi.
Well, Ivy and I just kind of come to steal food. Yeah, yep. Whatever. Yeah. Well, where's Ivy now? Oh, yeah. Out stealing food must be.
Yeah. Or, you know, find us at Babs's house.
Speaking of Babs, there was a victory this week. We got no Barbara.
Now, yay.
You know,
that's bad.
I'm going to
really shouldn't hate her.
I'm going to be honest. You know, she's an attractive lady. I'm a male that appreciates the female form and all, but, you know, the character's just horrible.
Yeah.
At least the way it's portrayed. Maybe it's supposed to be that way. She's supposed to kind of come across as pathetic. I'm not sure.
Well,
but we know that down the line, in terms of the book lore, you know, she does not end up with Jim Gordon. His daughter, well, okay, daughter is named Barbara, and that's probably a tip.
I talked to one of my friends about this.
Hmm.
She very shortly ends up with him. They have Barbara and their son, and then she dies. So they do end up getting married. It's really? Just they don't stay married.
I did not know that.
So, yeah, this was something I was confused about, too, because I know they weren't married when he had Barbara as a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, this is my failure.
Maybe that was just a tip, you know, because she's obviously dead, right? And he remarries and has Barbara.
Yeah.
So it's just like a name.
I'm going to have to investigate all that, because this is something I'm not clear on, is his backstory, like personal life backstory.
That's a good chance for our readers or our listeners to give us feedback too, in terms of,
please.
Yeah. Let us know if
this is something I never really investigated. I mean, I love Barbara Gordon, his daughter, Barbara Gordon,
mm-hmm.
And Commissioner Gordon from the books, but I never really cared so much about his like love life, because it never interested me. And now, you know, watching the show, I don't care about her at all. And so I was like, oh, well, at least he's not married to her.
We didn't see Leslie this week either.
No, or last week.
Yeah. I'm wondering if this is one of the episodes that was kind of one of the originally planned 16, right? Oh. And I'm wondering if the story arcs with Marina Baccarin weren't kind of added after.
Oh, I'm wondering. And they're just interspersing those?
Yeah, I'm wondering, because it makes sense. Could it's be. Like the plot line with Barbara is so loose that it could fit anywhere at this point in
sure.
time.
Sure.
So I'm kind of curious as to that, because she was definitely added as a cast member after they made the announcement that they were expanding the show.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and they could just be dropping her in here and there. Just can we please just get that worked out? That's all I have to say.
Yeah, well, let us know what you think. Do you have any theories about where the show is going, what your thoughts were on this episode, what you've seen, and what you think may be to come? Hit us up on Twitter. Our handle there is @GothamGSM.
And become a member of our Gotham Undercover discussion group on Facebook. That is facebook.com/groups/GothamGSM.
All right. So this episode, I'm going to give this episode out of... let's see. I'm going to give this 8 single bullet murders out of 10.
And out of 10 for me as well, I give it 8 bad CGI lady arms.
Yeah, you weren't too impressed by the special effects in that scene.
No, everything but that was good. I loved when Bullock is holding that guy's head down to the ground out of the car. That was amazing.
But yeah.
That body was gross.
Yeah, agreed. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for our investigation this week. And Gotham is going to return with new episodes on April 13th.
Yep, hiatus. Now that sweeps month is over, they're going to take a little hiatus. But I think we will do a couple of special episodes, most likely, between now and then. So please feel free to send us feedback in the meantime. We'll do probably some feedback stuff, probably some catch-up stuff, maybe some news, maybe I'll look into Commissioner Gordon's background.
Yeah, might be some special episodes, some kind of recaps of the season thus far, those kinds of things. So follow, you know, definitely stay tuned to our Twitter handle, and pay attention in the Facebook group. You know, definitely keep refreshing that podcast feed every Thursday morning, because we're going to probably be doing some special stuff between now and April 13th.
Yep. Will the doctor make Wednesday rumba night? For the answer to this question and more, tune in next week.
Same Gotham time, same Gotham channel.